Welcome to the ThinkComputer's weekly tech podcast. This is episode 140. As always, our podcast is brought to you by Amazon. Go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and, you know, purchase your tech stuff that way. Purchase your everyday life stuff that way, actually. It kicks us back a little bit of money. It helps this podcast to get made and other parts of the site to keep going. You know, it's not free. We enjoy it, but it's still not free. So a little bit of help goes a long ways. With me today, as always, what's up, Bob?
What's up, man? You sound excited. You're like, you did that intro like real excited.
It's a podcast, man. You gotta be excited for that.
We gotta be pumped for tech, I think. We didn't do a podcast last week, and that was kind of like the end of Computech. So we're gonna talk about some stuff mixed in with this week's news as well, because there was some pretty cool stuff at Computech and some controversy and some things that a lot of people are talking about. But before we do that, we'll jump into our reviews this week. And there's three completely different products from each other. And we'll start out with two cases that we saw at CES in January. And we had so many questions about these cases. We finally got them into review and we finally completed that review. And these are the Masterbox Q300L and Q300P. And they're extremely affordable. That's why so many people were interested, because for some people, a case is a case. And with tempered glass and everything, cases are becoming more and more expensive, especially even if you just want a basic case, you know, you're looking at $80 to, you know, $120. And these cases are $40 and $70 respectively. So very, very price conscious there. And these are micro ATX cases. And the thing I like about these is that basically Cooler Master was able to get two cases out of the same chassis pretty much. These cases are exactly the same internally, which is kind of cool. And they've just, especially the Q300L, which might be my favorite case out of the two, even though the Q300P is more flashy. The Q300L is just, they've taken the plain black case, the super inexpensive case, and just made it look cool.
It's almost all you need.
Yeah.
I mean, tempered glass is really cool, but like, it's almost like getting a custom paint scheme. Well, it's not, I guess not custom necessarily, but like so many cases, it's just like plain panels, you know?
Yeah, so what they've done, the Q300P is, again, it's the $40 case, and on the top and front is, the top and front of the case is completely ventilated, and on top of that ventilation, you have a removable filter, but they've kind of painted these filters with a cool design. You'll have to look at the photos in the review, but this design, it just makes it look cool, and it puts a normally, like I said, just that plain black box into something that just looks like a nice case.
It does.
Yeah, and what's great about that too is like these filters aren't hard to, you know, take out or remove. So when it comes to maintenance with this, you can just take the filter off, clean it, and put it right back on.
Now, do they magnetically attach?
Yes.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah.
So how does that feel? Because I've seen some things, different magnet devices use mats, fan filters, etc. On cases in the past, and sometimes they come off as like, they don't really feel like they're part of the case, kind of, because they're just kind of laying on there and lightly
these
attached.
These feel good. These, okay. You can actually pick up the case and they won't move.
They're not quite strong then.
Yeah, they're good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, because I know exactly what you're talking about. I've had some cases where like the filter is like, if you touch it, it just like flies off the case.
Yeah, and usually those have like plastic rings or frames around them,
yeah,
which makes them slightly heavier, so maybe that's what the advantage is with these.
Yeah, so these are great. So that's the Q300L. The Q300P is, again, it's the same chassis more or less, but they've added some things. So they've added four handles, so you actually have two on the bottom and two on the top, that makes this case appear to be bigger. And you also have some paneling, which is acrylic, that sits on the front and the top. So this gives it the more kind of gamer-esque type look. There's actually two RGB fans and like a little, some RGB lights in the around the top of the case. So this is for the more gamer-centric build, if you want to go that way. So those are the differences on the outside. Again, I think I just like the Q300L for its size. It is, these are really small. These don't take up a lot of space, which I like. So internally, they're micro ATX. You have room Yeah, you have room for full size graphics card in there. You have room for pretty tall CPU cooler as well as a full size power supply. You also have room for three hard drives. So you have room for 1.5 and 2 2.5 inch. So again, that Q300L with that, you know, stuff, it's like a, just a basic build for somebody. You know, I kind of like that because it saves you the space. And installation was easy. You know, that's one thing I really like about Cooler Master is they've, you know, they make cases for builders. And I think for system integrators, that Q300L is great. You know, the only downside to these cases, which I talked about, is the side panel. You do get a full side panel window, but it's acrylic. It's not tempered glass. And if you've ever dealt with acrylic, it scratches extremely easily. And it just doesn't look as nice. It just, you know, glass looks better than acrylic. It's just, you know.
It's not as opaque, so.
Yeah. And with the Q300P, the panels are acrylic as well. So that's something to consider. Besides that, they're really good. The one thing I also was kind of weirded out, not weirded out, but I had to figure it out, was with a Q300P, you have those two RGB fans plus the RGB lighting on the top of the case, and they give you a, they give you this little controller that comes with the case, but there's no instructions for it. You connect the controller and you can either connect it to a 4-pin on your motherboard, but if you don't have that 4-pin, you can actually, there's a 2-pin connection on it that you can repurpose to a button on the case, which I did with the reset button. But there's no instructions on how to do this. There's no instructions for the controller at all. So, you know,
just figure it out.
Yes, these are, at least I think, you know, these are targeted towards first time builders. It just, you know, the price points and everything. And I think as a first time builder, I'd be kind of lost. You know what I mean?
Yeah, with that for sure.
Yeah. But, you know, luckily we're talking about it, and if anybody is buying this case, they can read our review and see what I was able to do.
I think first-time reviewers are definitely looking at reviews too, or first-time builders are looking at reviews for sure. So,
You know, there's enough space behind the motherboard. I didn't have any trouble with routing cables. Everything went in fine, and I think these are great builder cases. These are great cases if you would rather spend that extra 50 towards a better graphics card or getting RGB memory instead of normal memory. You know what I mean? I was able to have a clean build with this, no problems. I was able to install an AIO. So as far as water cooling support or AIO support, really, you can do a 120 in the rear and a 240 in the front. So you can get an AIO in here, no problem.
I would say from a beginner standpoint, from a first-time builder standpoint, it doesn't get much better because ultimately, as a first-time builder, you don't need the fancy and the extra stuff because you're just not building that in your first rig. You don't even know what you want. I mean, you kind of know what you want, but you don't necessarily know what you want your first PC to be. You know, it's going to kind of develop over time. And so having just such kind of like a basic canvas to get started on is just super, super useful, I think. Yeah. Especially at such a low cost. It lets you put your money where it should be.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I like these cases. And I like that, again, there's like two to choose from. If you want the more gamer with the RGBs, if you don't, you get the Q300L. And I think they're great. And I think that both of these cases, while I think the Q300L has better airflow because you don't have the acrylic paneling kind of blocking some of that, you're gonna have good airflow too, and you're gonna have a nice cool system if you add some more fans. The Q300L only comes with one fan, which is a little disappointing, but I know they had to, you know, for cost and everything.
You said that was $40, right?
Yeah,
that's certainly kind of justified there.
Yeah, so I think these are great cases. It's good that, you know, we always talk about these super high-end cases that we love and that are amazing, but for a lot of people, you know, you have a budget, and if you want to, again, get a better graphics card or get that, you know, mechanical keyboard over a normal keyboard, you have to cut some cost out, and you can do that with a case, and it's great that Cooler Master is making cases like this.
Yep, there's definitely a place for it.
Yeah.
And there's definitely a place for making, like, sure, I can't afford, like, a high-end case or even a mid-range case. But that doesn't mean I have to have junk, you know?
Exactly.
Because you don't want the first-time builder to have that experience. And they're not going to come back.
Both of these look good. I mean, they look good sitting on your desk. They do. Both of them. So,
They definitely stand out. Yeah.
And like I said, I really like the Q300L for the fact that that could have been a plain box, right? That could have been a normal front panel.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
just that little bit of paint on that filter on the top, it just makes it look cool. It's like so simple. And when we saw it at CES, we're like, wow, that's so simple. Why hasn't anybody done this? You know?
Yep. The right graphic does a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
The wrong graphic, though, they definitely hit the nail on the head, though, because you can go the other way with that, too.
Yes.
The wrong graphic can really hurt a case as well. So.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So definitely check out that review. Two awesome cases. Just you know, I had a lot of fun doing that review. So that brings us to ADATA, and we took a look at their XPG SX 8200, the 480 gig version, and that's their M.2 NVMe PCI Express solid-state drive. This one makes use of the Silicon Motion SM2262 controller with Micron's 64-layer 3D TCL NAND. And it compared to, we, like, about a year ago, we took a look at ADATA's first M.2 SSD, and the performance was really all over the place, and it just, there was a lot of issues with it. And they
consistency issues.
Yeah, consistency issues. And this drive really kicks its ass. And this drive really puts the performance where it's needed most. And that is in random read access. You know, most of the time you're reading data on your PC. When you're writing, you're not doing high writes. You're doing, you know, not enough to even kill the cache that's on your drive for the most part. You know what I mean? So this drive is great. You have right around 3,200 megabytes a second or 3.2 gigabytes a second read and 1,700 megabytes a second write or 1.7 gigabytes a second write. So it performs right up to those specifications in most of our tests. And I think that's great. And then the price is really good. So the 480 gig that we reviewed, let me find the price here, is $200. That's a good price. That's a real good price.
It's very good.
And they back this with a 5-year warranty as well. Actually, it's even cheaper now. I'm looking at the same Amazon link. It's now $167.99.
That's a really good deal, especially considering the cost of NAND right now.
Yeah, that's a
flash memory has gone up.
Yeah,
it's a good deal.
And not to shoot on Amazon, but I'm seeing too, if you apply for their Amazon rewards card, the drive would only be $97.99.
There you go.
Yeah, which is awesome too. So, but no, it's a really great drive. And one thing I like that they did is the heat spreader comes not attached to the drive, which I like.
Yeah, that was interesting. Why is that?
Just for the fact that one, you can a lot of our motherboards have the built-in coolers now, and putting this on your board, it messes up the whole aesthetic of the board. You know what I mean? And for the end user, you don't want to have to rip it off yourself. It's just annoying.
No, that's yeah, and that's it's kind of scary for some people actually.
Yeah, for you know, you don't know what you're doing, and that heat spreader typically sits right on the controller, and if you and there's typically not something on top of that controller if this heat spreader is pre-installed, so you could have some issues where you bump that controller wrong and you just DOA it, you know.
So
really, really good performance. And you know, this is a drive that uses SLC cache, which most drives do. So if you are doing high writes, you are gonna get performance your performance is going to go down as long as and I was about to go out of a 480 gig drive, I was about to get to around 140 gigs right before the drive started to, you know, lose performance. And that's typical. You're only gonna have that high write performance over time on drives that are made for that, and if you're doing that, you're looking for that type of drive anyways, and that's not in this category. So this is just a great drive. I really didn't find any issues with it. The price is good. You have 5-year warranty, great performance where it counts, and it's awesome. It's a great turnaround from last year's drive. It's just a really great drive.
Yeah, good to hear from them. ADATA has been doing good stuff for a long time.
Yeah.
Want to see them keep doing that.
Yeah, yeah, so good stuff there. And then finally, I took a look at a unique product. And, you know, we always talk about building PCs and we talk about, you know, building our desk setup up and, you know, that being the place where we do most of our work. But one thing that we don't take into account is lighting that area. I work at night a lot and I take notes on things and I don't like to be completely in the dark. So a desk lamp is something that's important. It just is, especially if you're tired at night and, you know, working in the dark makes you even more tired. So you want a light. So
that's horrible for your eyes to sit there and stare at a LCD screen, LED screen.
That too. So
without any backlighting.
So BenQ has come up with a really cool product called the Screen Bar e-reading lamp. And this is a LED lamp bar, really, that sits on the top of your monitor. And it's universal. So it's made to fit pretty much any monitor. I don't see it not fitting any monitors based on my experience with it. Nice. I used it on a curved screen and it worked fine. And it's an LED, it's an LED light. And what's cool about this, and one, a couple things that I like about it. One, it eliminates space. So I have a big ass lamp from IKEA that I use as a, was using as a desk lamp. One, that takes up a lot of space. Two, I get screen glare. And three, it doesn't actually illuminate the proper space, like, you know, right below your monitor where you want the light to be illuminated, right? It illuminates the side of my desk or whatever. So this properly illuminates the area as well as no screen glare, and it takes up far less space because it sits right on top of your monitor. Another cool thing is that you have the ability to adjust the light temperature. So you can go from, I believe it's 2700K to 6500K. You can change the temperature. So if you like, you know, a warmer light, you can do that. If you like, a, you know, something that's more of, say, like outside light, you can kind of change that as well. You can adjust the brightness if you want. There's actually an ambient light sensor on this too. So the proper light from, in general, is 500 nits of brightness. So you just hit a button on here and it will, based on your ambient light around you, will put the lamp right at 500 nits of brightness based on your surroundings. Nice. So yeah, it's a cool little product and it's powered by USB. So if you, you know, have a monitor that has USB ports on it, then it's just less cable mess. You know what I mean? It's a cool product. It really is. It's probably the most feature packed desk lamp you're going to find. But you're going to pay a price for it. It's $100.
Yeah. Lamps are just expensive though. I do got to say that.
Yeah. No, like I said, it is expensive for this type of light. Now I put a comparison, like there's an IKEA lamp that comes with a bulb that's $13. but that IKEA lamp isn't going to give you the features. It's not going to have the right type of light. Like that's not an LED bulb that's in there. You know what I mean? It's not going to provide the type of light that this does. So it's something you have to consider. I think especially for single monitor people, this is great. I use it every day now, especially when I'm working at night, because it just, you know, I turn it on and it just illuminates my entire workspace, which is important to me. You know what I mean? It's a cool product. It's just, is that $99 worth it to you? I think that's the big question, you know?
There's probably definitely a group of people that this is for, and the price won't be the deal, you know, it won't be the deal.
Yeah, I mean, you can spend...
Correct lighting is super important.
You can spend upwards of $300 on a desk lamp, you really can. You know, so I think this is good. It's a cool lamp, it installs perfectly, it gives you those color temperature options and brightness options and everything like that. It's just cool. And being LED, it doesn't, you know, ambient powered by USB, you're not, you know, taking up a lot of power either. So yeah,
gotcha.
Cool stuff.
Nice.
So that is our reviews for the week. And that brings us to Case Mod Friday, which of course is where we cover a build or mod that's been completed in the community. And this week we have Project Predator or Praetor.
I would say Praetor.
Yes. And that's
kind of like that actually.
This is from AK Mod, and this was part of the Cooler Master Case Mod World Series 2018. It's very interesting because it's like not super flashy, but then if you look at the internals, it kind of is.
he's got some detail.
Yeah. AK Mod we featured before. He has that mid plate, and I don't think enough people do the mid plate well.
Not this well.
Yeah, sure. The mid plate of the case is not only illuminated, but he has an SSD mounted into it. He also has water cooling run through it.
It's channeled. It's got the LEDs. Even just the way the LEDs come into it, the bracket and the whole block of them coming in there, that looks super good, super clean, and really, really cool. Go ahead.
He also has a individually sleeved cables for, I'm not sure where they go, but he has that into the mid plate and illuminated too.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Okay, the LEDs there. Yeah.
Yeah.
At least I think they're just LEDs.
Can't tell. I wish we had
Yeah. My one complaint clicking through these is that the photos are too close.
Yes.
Like I need a little bit broader picture to get an idea of what the scope of what's going on.
Yeah.
But the details are in this are fantastic. The paint scheme is interesting. It's actually like an 80s what do you call that? They kind of flick different colors on top.
I'm not sure.
I don't know what you'd call it, but it looks good, but definitely not something that I would say is definitely in right now, but he did a good job with it still.
And I'm interested to see what water block that is. Is that a Cooler? It has Cooler Master logo on it, but I'm not sure who.
Yeah, there's a Cooler Master logo on the pump.
Yeah, it says the Master. Okay, so it's a Master Liquid Maker 240, which is a DIY kit, actually.
Kit, yeah. Okay.
That's cool. It's a cool way to feature that product, and I think this is a really cool build. Yeah, definitely. I like it.
Hopefully he did well in that competition.
Yeah.
Wait, was this 2017 or?
This is 2018.
This year's? Okay.
Yeah. So really cool build there. So, and we have a video, so you can check out his video as well. We have it in the article, so you can definitely check that out. But yep, another good build, which I'm a fan of. I really like that mid plate design, so. Yeah, cool stuff there. Also, this week, or did we announce it last week? We're running a contest with Arctic Cooling. It is summertime and it's hot. It was extremely hot yesterday. At least
crazy. Yeah,
it was right around 100 degrees with humidity here. Mm-hmm. It was super hot. So we're running a contest with Arctic, and we are giving away 5 of their Summair mobile USB fans. So these are fans you just plug into a USB port and it's a fan. Cool little contest, but we
kind of an old school device.
Yes, it definitely, like yesterday, it would have helped me if I had one of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure.
So we're giving away 5 of those, but we're one-upping it even more. We're giving away 2 $25 gift cards to your favorite online store, whatever one you want. Just an example, nice. Newegg, Amazon, Steam, Origin, you know what I mean? Whatever it is, we'll contact you and we'll get you the gift cards. One of those gift cards is being given away on YouTube. We have the video linked in the giveaway page, and you can see how you can win it on YouTube. The other one is just part of the regular contest. So yeah, and it goes, it started on the 14th and it goes to the 28th. So yeah, super easy to enter. All the information is on the page. Just trying to get back to you guys. So yeah, we have that going on.
Sweet, Bob.
So that brings us to news, and we're going to go through like we normally do, but there's some Computex stuff mixed in here. And we'll start with one of the biggest controversies that happened at Computex is that we did talk about on the last podcast is that, you know, Intel introduced this 28 core high-end desktop processor running at 5 gigahertz. It was discovered later in the week that this processor to achieve 5 gigahertz was cooled by a industrial chiller. And if you look at the picture, that thing is huge. That's not a consumer product by any means.
Oh, yes, it is.
The
there is a very niche segment of PC hardware enthusiasts that will fight you over that.
Bro. Yeah, it is a Halea HC chiller. It pumps 1,500 to 4,000 liters per hour and uses R124 refrigerant. to cool down to 4 degrees Celsius. It actually has a cooling power of up to 1,770 watts.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so one, they didn't say what type of processor this was. It turns out this is a Xeon Platinum Skylake SP processor. It's not your, you know, X299 high-end desktop processor for sure. One, there's no possible way you're getting this to run at 5 gigahertz on normal cooling. Even normal water cooling, it doesn't seem like that's possible. And when Intel was interviewed about this, or, you know, asked, they said, oh, we forgot to mention that it was cooled by this. I think they, you know, definitely didn't want to mention it, especially during the interview, or especially during their presentation, because every website was like, oh, 28 core, 5 gigahertz. You know, that's the headline that they wanted. So it's a little deceiving.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
It's a little deceiving. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what you think about
that. It's deceiving in the fact that they did and they did not present it as 5 gigahertz is what it's going to run at.
Mm-hmm.
That's the trouble. But they didn't actually come outright and claim that either. So
yeah,
as the stock speed, so it's kind of
the stock speed is half that, is 2.5 gigahertz.
Yeah,
you know, just in my experience, trying to overclock an 18 core on an AIO, getting 5 gigahertz on all 28 cores, which that's what they were doing, is need something like that to do. So,
It's fairly hard.
There's a lot of rumors going around that they had heard about Threadripper 2 presentation, which happened the next day, and they wanted to one-up them before they had that presentation.
Yeah.
And it was put together last minute. Like, nobody knows actually what happened. But, you know, this is stuff that we're not used to seeing from Intel, I can tell you that much. We're not used to seeing them... Not lie, but
they're usually much sneakier than this.
They're not much sneaky. Yeah, you know, they're
they don't get caught.
They don't have to do these.
No, they've never had to do this.
Yeah, so
yeah,
it's interesting. It's an interesting thing, and I think that next couple stories that we'll talk about as well. You know, it's going to be a fun year for CPUs, especially in the high end desktop space this year. They're, you know, getting towards the end of this year.
Definitely it will
be. Yeah, so talking about that, Intel is working on a 22 core LGA 2066, so that will run in your X299 board. It looks like that, you know, this was announced after Computex, or leaked after Computex, so this could this will run on your X299 motherboard. It seems to be in response to AMD's 24 core Threadripper 2 processor that was shown at Computex, which we'll talk about in a second. You know, this will this should be the new flagship part that should come in the next couple months, I think. It's still, I think that we're pushing these core counts, and we're pushing this where it's not needed, because I don't know, I just don't think it's needed. You know, for a high-end desktop, which is an enthusiast part for sure.
It is and it isn't.
You know,
it's borderline professional.
Yeah, but I mean, you're already paying $2,000 for the 18 core. I mean, you're gonna go up to 22 core, which will be like 2,500. I mean, do we really need this many cores? Is it just a battle between the two?
It's certainly a battle between the two. I think that there's people that need this kind of, that can put this kind of core count to use. Do they need it? They will eventually, maybe.
Thing that I'm seeing is, like, we're increasing core counts, but we're not increasing efficiency, especially when it comes to temperature. The more core counts we get, the hotter we're getting. I mean, even Coffee Lake, we were seeing that.
Yeah, and actually, that's something. Temperature is going to be the biggest issue. Well, maybe that's not quite correct, but it's going to be one of the biggest issues going forward, especially as die shrink. And die shrink is very similar to adding cores, cramming more cores in, and that you have a lot more going on in a smaller space than you even had before. Yeah. So there's no way around it, around the temperature thing. It's just, it's a matter of, like, getting these to run is going to start to require, like, some sort of liquid cooling, and maybe even more than that.
Yeah, and that's the thing that, I don't know.
I don't think I have a problem with that, though. It's just that you're going to have to start designing the cooling around the idea that the processor needs that kind of cooling.
Yeah, yeah, and, I mean, we saw it with X299 in general, like VRM cooling. To have these stable, you need some pretty hefty VRM cooling, just in general. So they'll be doing the 22 core as well as 8 core Coffee Lake. So we will see that. We thought we would see it announced at Computex. It was not. So it looks like we will see an 8 core Coffee Lake chip. Not sure when, probably September, but no real definite.
Probably get a whole big announcement deal with that.
Yeah. But 8 core Coffee Lake, again, temperatures, I mean, we saw really high temperatures in 90°C when you're pushing it, you know, and that's on an AIO, and that was with 6 cores. So, so we'll see how that goes. Especially, that's what I, like, for mainstream, you know, like, an 8-core Coffee Lake will be a Core i7, you know, on the mainstream, you know, and if you're pushing it, doing video encoding, even some games and things like that. I mean, if it's doing 90°C on a 280mm AIO, I mean, that's, I don't know. Just for the mainstream, I'm just not, I don't know.
It's borderline too high. Yeah.
So we'll see. Obviously, we don't know how they're going to perform until they come out. But that's the for mainstream, that's the issue that I really see. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a problem to be solved, I say.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So it's the way forward is that direction. So it's not a matter of, like, how do we make this not create heat? It's going to create heat. There's too much going on in such a small space.
Exactly. So hopefully, with these new processors, we'll see some type of better cooling somehow.
We're gonna have to invent something.
Yes.
No, I think we're getting sort of towards the realm of science fiction where, like, well, this computer has to be, like, cooled with liquid nitrogen all the time or something like that.
Well, talking about that, that leads us into our next story. At Computex, famous overclocker DeBauer overclocked the Core i7-8086K, which was the limited edition processor that Intel launched. He overclocked it to 7.24 gigahertz under LN2.
Nice.
This is not the highest. The 87K was able to do 7.409, so not the highest overclock, but still very, very high.
This is a slightly different part, too.
Yeah. So. It's just cool to see. We love these overclocking stories. And he made a video of it as well, so we have that in our article, and you can check it out. Just cool stuff. Nice. So talking about that processor, so Intel announced the Core i7-8086K, and then they announced a contest where they would give away 8,086 of these. You know what I mean? just this week, AMD kind of took some shots at AMD, or took some shots at Intel, and said, if you won the contest, we'll take your Core i7-8086, which is a 6-core part, and we'll give you, if you give it to us, we'll give you a Threadripper 1950X, which is currently their flagship high-end desktop part, which is a 16-core part. That's kind of hard to pass up if you're gonna use the part.
I mean, monetarily, I think that they're offering something, like, those are two different parts,
obviously,
right? Two different way different end games for each of those, so I don't know how many people would actually be tempted by that. For most people, the Threadripper is not going to do anything for them as far as gaming and other things go, so
yeah.
In fact, the 8086K would probably end up being the better part in gaming, I'm going to guess.
Yes. But, I mean, if you were going to do video encoding or anything with multiple core use,
yeah.
You know. Yeah.
SmackDown comes from the
1950s. But because of this, Intel kind of fired back, and they posted on Twitter. They said, AMD, if you wanted an Intel Core i7-8086 processor too, you could have just asked us, with a smiley face. So I'd like this. You know, we've seen this back and forth with AMD and NVIDIA, and now we're seeing it with AMD and Intel. It's kind of cool. It, like, just brings some drama and fun to the whole industry. I think it's good for the industry. It's cool. I like it.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. But yeah, so talking about AMD and Threadripper 2, which was shown off at Computex. So they showed off two chips. They showed off the 32-core, and they showed off a 24-core. And the 24-core did beat the Intel 18-core part. It did. So they were showing that this is, you know, this is real silicon too. This is not another part that's going to work on something else like Intel's part that they showed.
Yeah, this is production
piece. You know, so, and then they did have the 32 core, and of course these all have SMT, so you have 64 threads there. These are going to be later this year. They just showed some demos, you know what I mean? But they, you know, these are going to be ready probably, you know, Q3, I'm guessing September 2, for these. But if you didn't want to get into Threadripper initially, this will be the one to get. These will work on current, what's it called? X399 motherboards. I always get them messed up. Why do they always have to call me?
It's because they're so close to
each other. These will work on current X399 motherboards, and they'll have new ones come out when these launch, just because, you know, there'll be newer tech at that time. Oh, yeah. And, you know, so...
gotta have that new. Yeah, new.
And the architecture is more proven now, so this will be the time to get in. And the flagship is looking to be the 32-core. So you're going to have 24, 28, and 32-core parts. It also looks like you probably will going to get an 8-core, 12-core, and 16-core to kind of complete the entire lineup of Threadripper. So yeah, it looks like, you know, they're gearing up probably Q3 for this. Yeah, and it's going to be a good year for CPUs, like I said. So we'll see this face up against probably the 22-core from Intel, and then if Intel somehow tries to market that other chip as in a high-end desktop part, not a super professional data center part, then yeah, we'll go up against that as well. So yeah.
Yep.
We did see AMD reveal 7-nanometer Radeon Vega at Computex. So no consumer gaming part right now. It's an Instinct part. It's an AI accelerator part, but it's the first graphics card for 7-nanometer. Which is good because we're moving in that direction. Yeah. For those who thought we would see a new architecture, this is just Vega shrunk down. You know what I mean? So it looks like the next round of Radeon RX cards will be Vega, but they will be on 7-nanometer. So you will see performance and efficiency boost there. But they did have a real GPU running Cinema 4D to show you that they do have working silicon. And they weren't just talking about it. They weren't just showing you a chip and saying, this is what we have. They had a real card, but it was an Instinct card. It wasn't an RX card. So... the AMD CEO Lisa Su did confirm that you will have 7-nanometer GPUs, you know, for the gaming segment. So that's exciting if you're an AMD fan. 7-nanometer will definitely give you, you know, performance boost as well as efficiency, and that's a big thing when you go down and die sizes efficiency. So
yeah, it's really just exciting for an AMD fanboy though, because it's still not going to be anything worth purchasing.
You think?
I mean, honestly, no.
Yeah, I don't think.
It'll be a slight increase, but there's no way that it comes close to next generation NVIDIA.
Yeah. And it we'll have to see how it goes up against Intel. We thought, you know, by all accounts, we would see an Intel part or some type of an Intel part at CES 2019, which happens obviously in January. But Intel made an official statement saying they'll be entering the discrete GPU market in 2020. So that's...
Well, that's entering the market in 2020. That doesn't mean that we won't see some engineering sample of some sort.
And they say they're going to be entering the data center and client markets. And client market means gaming GPU. Yeah. Hopefully that's what that means. That's what we are taking from this. This was an official article on Intel's website as well as tweets and everything like that. You know, it seems to be that the mid-range market is where Intel will start, just from, you know, that's where AMD and NVIDIA are making a ton of money at.
It's where you can enter a card and you can sell it, and you don't have to create the fastest performing card at the time, right? You can get in there and get your feet wet without actually having to compete. You just have to have a decent card in the mid-range. Yeah. Whatever you make, just call it your mid-range
exactly.
card.
Exactly. You know, this actually isn't the first time Intel tried to get into discrete graphics. Almost 20 years ago, Intel released the Intel 740, which failed pretty badly. It was put up against 3DFX Voodoo 2 and NVIDIA Riva 128.
How are you going to compete with the Voodoo 2?
Exactly. But this will be another, you know, trying to get into that market. So we'll see. I think 2020 is a while away, so you can't really get super excited right now, but, you know,
it's also not that far away.
It's a couple years,
year and a half.
And we'll see us. I think CES 2020, we could see the announcement, the big gaming announcement, hopefully.
We could.
Yeah. Hopefully, we'll see how that all goes. I'm excited for a third player, it just makes things more fun. We're talking about graphics in NVIDIA. It looks like NVIDIA has briefed their add-in board partners about the next-gen GeForce series. So this is the next. It's either going to be called 1180 or 2080, whatever you want to call it. The next-generation GeForce cards. They have briefed the partners, and they've given them the bill of materials. This bill of materials allows the card partners to source components for their custom design cards and everything like that.
Gets the process going.
And the bill of materials does give the timeline and the tentative amount of time for each of the stages. So that gives us kind of a timeline of when things should happen. You know, it looks like if this bill of materials was released sometime in May and June-ish, then we should see a product launch sometime in August, which is exciting. And that brings us to our next story, which there was an interview with PowerLogic. Is this his company chairman of PowerLogic? I've never heard of PowerLogic before this article. They make the cooling fans for, at least we know, at least EVGA they make the cooling fans for. And that's their...
Yeah. Sounds like they make them for most aftermarket.
Yeah, based on this article, it seems like it. There was an interview with the DigiTimes and the PowerLogic. They expect to enjoy strong revenue growth momentum in the second half of 2018, mainly bolstered by stable orders from the firm's new car ventilation fans and increasing GPU cooling fan shipments starting in the third quarter. So basically, they're expecting this new launch. They're expecting orders of these fans from all of these card makers. So this gives just more backing to the fact that we're likely going to see a launch. I'm thinking the end of July.
Yeah. No way. I bet it's because they're going to start shipping fans to be. I mean, if you kind of look at the step-by-step, the week, the guideline, they're going to be shipping fans to start getting built into parts, I think, you know, early July. And then I actually think you're probably looking more like late quarter three for the actual launch.
That'd be in August.
Yeah. Well, no.
September. Okay.
August, September.
Because the interesting thing about this is, you know, they did say that we talked about it maybe a month ago, that the Hot Chips presentation said the next generation GeForce architecture. And typically, the Hot Chips presentation is of the card that's already announced. So that's why I'm thinking August. I'm thinking July 30th. And I think Anthony at Tweaktown said July 30th as well as an announcement. And then cards will ship after that, obviously. And the Hot Chips is August 4th. So that would kind of put those two together.
Yeah,
but we don't know. But it looks like, at least hopefully, unless NVIDIA's like, oh yeah, we'll wait till 2019. It looks like we will have, even though they're not needed, it doesn't seem like they're really needed. We will see new GeForce cards this year, hopefully August, September, October. hopefully we see them.
No competition and not needed are two different things though, right? Like, we can definitely use them to push graphics. We just, there just isn't any competition to push them to have to create something better than anyone else.
Correct.
That's all.
Correct. So hopefully we see that. I want new. I mean, we've had these cards for 2 years. So it would be nice to see new NVIDIA graphics. You know, typically when NVIDIA announces a new generation of graphics cards, they really blow the previous one out of the water.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise they cannibalize the
Away. So, you know, I'm just excited. I really hope it's July 30th with, you know, with a real like ship date in the middle of August. That'd be great. So we'll just have to see.
I can agree with that. Mid to late August ship date.
So we'll have to see for that. So talking about graphics and monitors, you know, Computex was the big showing of these 4K 144Hz monitors. And a lot of people went out and bought them, and there's reviewers that have them in their hands too. And an interesting thing happened is that many early adopters and reviewers said that, you know, the monitors were kind of fuzzy and blurry running 4K 144Hz, but when they're at 4K 120Hz, they look pitch perfect. They look amazing. And it turns out that, the reason for this is that they use this process called chroma subsampling, which I had to learn about before I wrote this article. Basically, the DisplayPort 1.4 interface does not have enough bandwidth. It has 26 gigabits of bandwidth. It does not have enough bandwidth to run 4K at 144Hz. It just has enough bandwidth to run 4K at 120Hz. So basically, this chroma subsampling transmits the grayscale portion of the image at full resolution. So at full 4K, you get the grayscale image. The color information is sent at half the horizontal resolution. So you'd be 1920 by 2160 instead of 3840 by 2160. So basically, you're cutting half of the color information out horizontally. And this has been used in the movie industry for as long as you can see. And you don't see a huge difference. But when it comes to computer-generated images, especially text and, like, you know, your heads-up display in gaming, you lose that sharpness.
Areas of high detail.
And, of course, you know, as a gamer, you want that 4K 144Hz with it looking amazing. And I think that, at least for me, if something's like weird on my screen, even if it's the smallest little thing, it's really going to bother me.
Definitely.
You know, and the thing about this story too is that there's no mention of this anywhere in the technical specifications of these displays. Nothing.
Yeah, I don't think they would sell a whole lot of them.
Yeah.
If people had known that they're really not getting what they're
getting. Yeah, so, you know, they are getting basically a 4K 120Hz screen. And I think this has a lot to do with NVIDIA and game and everybody wanting this. I mean, that is the new pinnacle gaming spec, 4K 144 hertz, right? But you're really not going to get a unmodified RGB image through that connection at that speed or at that resolution and that refresh rate.
Yeah.
And there's the only ways to do it really would be HDMI 2.1 or DisplayPort's DSC data compression scheme. Both are very new, and there's not really a lot of display controllers that even support it.
They're not really
developed. Nothing's developed for it. So it's just like, yeah, we want these monitors, but the tech's really not there. So they kind of had to fandangle it to.
I mean, they did what they could, but like they probably just shouldn't have.
I think if enough people are reading this, I mean, if I was actually considering a 4K 144 hertz display, and then I read this, I would be like, no, like I'll wait. Yeah.
No. Yeah, you actually want that. That's why you're paying for it. You know, you want the 144 hertz at 4K. You don't want half of it subsampled. You don't want data missing. You definitely don't want fuzziness,
especially in games where you use that heads-up display a lot.
Which is what every single video game, basically.
I mean, and it would just annoy the hell out of me. So that's something to really research. I think if you're looking at these displays, research them. Look at reviews before you buy, as you should with any product anyways. But look at, you know, in-depth reviews of these products that really showcase this kind of stuff. So. So moving back to Computex, you know, every year at Computex, Inwin has an over-the-top case. Just completely crazy. We've seen it for years, and it's kind of like the highlight, one of the highlights of the shows for us, because we're mainly hardware-based. This year, they showed a product called their Z-Tower, and it's a cast aluminum type of case. And honestly, I'm not a fan. I think
it's cool, but it's simply just a piece of art that happens to hold PC
components. Yeah, and I think out of all of theirs, maybe even last year's, like that circle thing with the AI bot, whatever. Yeah, but this one and that one, I think, are the two worst I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, actually, I feel like aesthetically, I like this one better than even the Transformer one. Just because I just didn't like the way that thing was shaped. But functionally, and especially cost and weight-wise, this thing is pretty much useless.
Yeah, I mean, just by the case by itself weighs 90 pounds. It's cast aluminum. It supports EATX, full-size graphics cards, all that kind of stuff. You know, there were reports of $10,000. I've heard $5,000. I don't know how much it costs, but I would never pay $5,000 for this. Yeah. Just for the fact that I could build an amazing PC for that, because I don't want to pay $5,000 just for a case. Again, I'm just not a fan of this. That's me. You guys can check out the article and see if you like it or not. But yeah.
I don't think they actually really intend to sell this case. I mean, they do, but not at any sort of scale.
I would like to see some mods, but I mean, again, you're really not going to add on.
What are you going to do, though? It's like super modded already. It is. Yeah. What are you going to do? Drill into
that's
that
why I like the one that, what was that one that they did a few years ago? There was a lot of cool mods done with that case. The one that was a single piece of aluminum that was bent.
The S Tower?
I think that might have been it, yeah. But whichever one it was, that one was really cool. I just think that, I mean, now this is like Inwin's thing and they're kind of stuck with it and they just have to come up with something crazy every year. You know what I mean?
They're pretty much forced into that. Yeah.
But I don't know. It's like I said, I'm not a huge fan. I think that I would rather spend $5,000 on a lot of other things.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna spend $5,000 on a case, it's probably not money's not really the thing.
Yes. So moving over to memory, one of the coolest memory kits that I saw at Computex was the Galax Hall of Fame Extreme. These are the Extreme Series limited edition DDR4 memory. They are clocked at 5,000 megahertz, and they have a gold plated heat spreader that just looks sick.
Dude, I kind of need this. Yeah,
so you get a 16 gigabyte kit running at DDR4 5,000 speeds. That is the XMP timings. there's also a second kit that runs a little slower. If you don't, maybe your motherboard might not support 5,000. So they have another one that runs at 4,700 megahertz with timings of 19, 26, 26, 46. Both of these...
A little tighter timings.
Yeah, both of these run at 1.5 volts. And then there's another kit, a chrome silver one. So it's just basically looks like chrome. Still looks sick. These run at DDR4 4,500 megahertz. And these are 19-19-39 at 1.4 volts.
I have to assume the 5,000 megahertz kit is faster, but with the there's a big timing difference. I'm curious to see what the actual...
Yeah, like, I would love to test all of these and then see what, you know, see the performance.
Yeah,
but I mean, system, those gold-plated heat spreaders, and those are nice heat spreaders. Those look amazing.
Dude.
Yeah, those look awesome.
Dude, put in the right build, those are...
Yeah, money. And I believe, I'm not sure, but I believe that Galax logo lights up, but I could be wrong.
Oh,
yeah. But yeah, really awesome kit. They're limited edition. Not sure how many they're gonna make. But they just look amazing. Sadly, we probably won't see these in the United States because we typically don't see them.
Nope.
Oh, it's cool. I didn't even notice on the heat spreader it says Galax OC Lab on the gold ones.
Yeah.
And on the silver ones too.
Says
yeah, that's really cool. Yep. So,
man, get those imported.
Yes, for sure. One of the last things we'll talk about at Computex, because I'm a huge fan of small keyboards. I'm using one now.
Minimalist.
I'm using one now. Cooler Master showed off this 67 key keyboard with the Cherry low profile switches. It is going to be called the CK620. And it is super small, minimalist type keyboard. Obviously, of Cherry MX low profile switches, which were only just announced at CES in January.
This is one of the first mainstream board manufacturers that we've seen with them, actually.
And 67 key, so really, really small. There's no border like around the chassis. The chassis has an aluminum plate on it. You have RGB backlighting, RGB backlighting around the keyboard itself.
Yeah, which looks like it's got individually addressable LEDs in it as well.
And it can be used wired or wireless because it does have Bluetooth too. So I really like this thing.
This thing's got it. It's got it going on.
I just like the look of it. I like the minimalist look. I like the quality.
I like the angle. The angle looks great too.
The quality looks really good, you know, with the metal plate on the top. Yeah.
Definitely need to get this.
Yeah, when this comes available, I don't know when this... It's not on their website because I looked today. I don't know when this will be available, but it... it looks awesome. So it looks like they'll have a couple larger versions of this as well, but I like the super small one. So
I want to see them all.
I
love that brushed aluminum backplate on it, the panel. That looks great. We've seen that. We've seen brushed aluminum a ton, but the shape of that, the bevel on it, it's just
it really looks like Cooler Master has a winner with this one, at least in my eyes. But
yeah, Cooler Master is getting their stuff together, man.
And like,
they really are. They're really one of the only
kind of companies that offer the PBT keycaps too, on their, and that makes all of the difference.
Are these PBT?
I don't believe so. But for like, you know, they had their PBT line, like Corsair didn't offer a PBT line. Yeah. I don't think Razer did either. So, you know, that made a lot of people buy aftermarket PBT keycaps because they make the world of difference. Mm-hmm. The keyboard I have now has PBT keycaps, and like, that's why I love it.
I mean, Corsair even offers an upgrade keycap kit so that you can get them. So,
awesome stuff there. And then we'll move to gaming because E3 was this past week, right? And yes. One of the big announcements was new Gears of War game. It's going to be called Gears 5, and it's weird that they dropped the Gears of War. I'm not sure why. This game looks so beautiful. Microsoft described it as the biggest, most beautiful Gears world ever created. It's going to follow Kate Diaz, who was introducing Gears of War 4 in the multiplayer mode. And looking at the videos, especially if you watch the cinematic trailer, it looks so beautiful. It says in the trailers, it says like Xbox only, but based on what Microsoft has done, this should be Xbox and Windows 10 when it releases. And if it should support, like, it's going to support 4K Ultra HD resolution, HDR. And if you guys remember, Gears of War 4 was one of the first games to use all of the cool NVIDIA tech. It ran really well on PC. It looked amazing on PC, and this game's just going to look just as amazing. And I'm excited for it because I do enjoy Gears of War games. I like the story. Like, Gears is one of the games that actually has a good story, at least in my opinion. And I like to play the story mode. So, it's excited. It's going to announce next year. Probably most Gears of War games come out in... what's it called? Come out in a holiday season. So that's a long ways away.
Yeah, we'll see
when this, but as soon as we know, we'll definitely let you guys know. But I like watch the cinematic trailer. It just looks amazing.
Yeah. I hate to say it, but I don't think that was the biggest thing from E3, man.
Yeah.
Cyberpunk 2077.
You
know what?
So I was watching all this stuff and I didn't see anything about it. So why don't you tell me about it?
CD Projekt's new game. It's been in development for a really long time, but it was a surprise that they showed up to E3 with a trailer for it, and it looks phenomenal. I mean, it's that futuristic cyberpunk world that I feel like really PC gamers especially are like into. I don't know what it is, but I feel like it's a PC thing specifically. Okay. Specifically is the wrong word. Especially, it's an especially PC thing, I feel like. Because we've always had games like this that are set in futuristic worlds, and it looks okay. Phenomenal.
This is from the guys that did Witcher 3 Wild Hunt. Nice. I saw some things about this, but I didn't really get to watch it. I'll have to go back and watch the trailer, and
It's that Blade Runner.
Yeah.
And what's I'm blanking out on that game that we've. Games that we've had, the Jensen. What is that? I can't think of it. It's another cyberpunk. Nice.
Well, I'll have to check it out.
Game. Well, yeah. I think that it looks fantastic. It's gonna have a great story. It's gonna be a huge world, and I feel like it's gonna play really well.
Nice. I'll have to check out the trailer. We'll link the trailer in the show notes so you guys can check it out, and I'll also check that out. Yeah. And our final gaming news is that, well, two things, because we'll give you guys a heads up for what's coming, I believe, next week. Yes, next week. First, Origin has had their Infinite gaming sale going on. This started on the 8th, and it ends on the 21st. So if you guys listen to this podcast early, you'll be able to get in. Lots of good deals on Origin games. Star Wars Battlefront 2 is 67% off. Battlefield 1 is 75% off. FIFA 18, 67% off. A lot of stuff.
A lot of good deals
the
there.
Entire Mass Effect trilogy, which is a good game to play through for the story, all of them are actually, is 75% off. It's only $7.49. They have a dedicated page for it. You can see what's all there. Lots of good games on sale. Especially if you're looking to pick up Battlefield 1, if you're looking to pick up Star Wars Battlefront 2, it's a good time to get it because they're 75% off and 67% off. So,
yeah, I think there was Battlefield 1 and Titanfall 2 combo pack for like $10 or something like that. I was like, yeah, there's a lot. That. Oh no, it's $20. Yeah. Excuse me. That's still a really good deal.
There's a lot of stuff that you can pick up here. So definitely check that out. We have the link in our article to the dedicated page for it. But also, guys, stay tuned because next week, Steam Summer Sale starts on Monday. I totally forgot about it, but yeah, it starts on Monday. Tons of sales. We're probably not gonna do like, we'll probably shoot something out on Twitter and Facebook, like what are some great deals for each day, but it's so many sales. Just have your, you can have your Steam client open or just go to the Steam website and you can see what's on sale. There's a ton of stuff. I'll probably pick up some games because like a lot of games are like 99 cents, you know. It's just like
those are the ones you can't pass up, and then they
yeah,
just
and then you never play them, so But yeah, lots of cool gaming stuff. Yeah. Gaming games to look forward to, and tons of games on sale over the next couple weeks, guys. So definitely stay tuned for all of that. And then coming next week, I'll be taking a look at the Azza Hurricane RGB Fan. So this continues our RGB Fan quest to give to show you guys what are the best RGB fans out there, because now there's so many. And these are from Azza. And these come with a controller, which you should be able to... Actually, I believe you can control these via Bluetooth with a controller, which is cool, which I like.
Looks like they also plug into
headers, they plug into headers, or you can plug them in... or you can just use them with their controller. And I believe the controller plugs into USB, and I believe there's software, too. So you have software in your computer, you can use your motherboard's header, and there's like mobile software, which you have to connect the USB to work anyways. They look really good. Seems like this one has a lot of features. And it's from Azza, who we don't necessarily, associate with, you know, really awesome,
components at all.
We'll have to see how, those do. And I'll be taking a look at my first motherboard from BioStar, actually. They sent us over their B360 GTS3, which is part of their racing line. It's just a, you know, it's a micro ATX board, which are extremely popular, it seems like. We've seen a lot of cases come out for micro ATX. So this is your B360 board, which will work with Intel's Coffee Lake processors. And just going to see how this does, see how BioStar kind of stacks up, see how their BIOS is. You know, I like checking out new stuff, new motherboard stuff, just to see how their BIOS stuff works and if they have a software package for this, if it works. I literally just like installed it today, so I haven't really had a lot of chance to, go through it or anything like that. But it'd be interesting to see what BioStar has to offer. And I know they've kind of made an effort to really get into more enthusiast type stuff with their board. So we'll just have to see. And
I'm curious to see.
And then finally, I'll be taking a look at HyperX's new Predator DDR4 RGB memory. So HyperX Predator memory with RGB on the top. They look awesome. We have a 16 gigabyte DDR4 2933 kits. So just to see how these, you know, we're doing a lot of RGB stuff. I think everything has RGB. So we just did the Crucial kit, and now we're doing the HyperX kit, and then we have an I believe an ADATA kit, or I don't know if the other kit I have here, but we'll be rolling through all these. So there's a lot of different RGB options, so we'll let you guys know the differences and what they look like and all that kind of stuff. So we have all that coming up next week, and this brings us to the end of the podcast, where we talk about if we did any cool tech stuff or checked out any games or watched any, you know, cool movies or anything like that. So, did you do any of that?
Well, I got a couple of things here I guess I'll throw out there. For one, if you really want to get your in-depth E3 information, check out our buddies' podcast, which they did a three-part series for E3, nice. Jewelcast. They did a fantastic job of covering it. I thoroughly enjoyed all of it, and I felt like I got all the information. Nice, about E3.
We will those we'll guys. Link that in our show notes as well. So,
and then as far as consuming stuff, I watched a couple movies. I guess is all I did. I watched the new Tomb Raider movie, and I give that two thumbs up. That was great. Lots of action. It was actually like an action movie that I like. Enjoyed, and I like action adventure movie, I guess is what I should say. Like, there's been so many like Transformers and all these movies that like try to be big and good, and they just kind of like fail. It's just like, I don't know, it's too much. It's hard to put your finger on exactly what they do. But this one, I felt like it was a really good movie. Worth watching and fun. And what else did I watch? Oh, I watched Game Night. And I thought
that I saw that on Netflix. I think, is that Netflix? Or no, that's the other one. But no, I've seen the, I know which one you're talking about now.
Like, everybody was like raving about it when it was coming out. Like, oh, we got to go see it. We got to go see it. And it's so funny. Oh, it's so good. And I'm like, what? I'm so confused why everybody says this is so funny. It was so disjointed. And the plot was like, if you guess the plot in the beginning, you guess the plot right.
Well, so, I haven't watched. I haven't watched any movies. I don't think. No movies. And the one thing I did do this past week, if you guys saw it on our YouTube page, is that I posted the first video review in a while. It's been a couple months, kind of regathering everything and getting a good kind of platform and everything to really put out good video content. So I did a review, which we already did the, you know, written review, but I did a video review of Corsair's Crystal Series 280X RGB case. And I think it came out really well. We're getting some really great comments and feedback on that. So guys, you can definitely check that out on our YouTube page. I think that's all I really did. I've been enjoying the nice weather.
Oh, it's been great.
I did get a new standing desk, which I put together from a company called iMover. Which we'll be having a review on, but I installed it in my office downtown. So, and what's this, like, this would be my third one that I've reviewed, and this one was so easy to put together. To put in perspective, I got a shoe rack from IKEA, which is like a 2-shelf shoe rack. The standing desk was easier to put together than the shoe rack. So, yeah.
That's funny.
And like if it was designed as the other desk that I reviewed, it would not be, but they designed it so, you know, their main market is like businesses and things like that, and if you're in a suit, you don't want to have to have a hard time putting this thing is so easy to put together. We'll have a video on and everything like that, but that's the other techie thing I did this past week. So that we'll talk about it as we get closer to the review, but it's a really awesome product. So that is it, guys. We've been talking about the show notes page. We will have a full show notes page that has everything that we talked about, so you can click through and get even more information. And if you're looking for us on your, you know, podcasting app or the iTunes or whatever it may be, you just search for us, Think Computers, all one word. So until next week, catch you guys later.